Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have made it almost through a full week's worth of games in the 2017-18 season. And unsurprisingly, it has been a wild first week. We are here to talk about the Phoenix Suns completely imploding. We'll also review Lonzo Ball's debut in the NBA, Markelle Fultz's wonky shooting mechanics, and Dwayne Wade accepting his role on the bench for the Cavaliers. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Joining me today, as always, are my two co-hosts, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
Giannis Antetokounmpo is 22 years old, Brian. 22. And he's doing these ridiculous things. I feel old.
Right? I know. We had that talk about him on last episode, and I'm still finishing this B-ball breakdown piece on him. It's just like, I don't even know what to say about him, aside from he's already a top five player in the NBA. That's the only thing I could say.
It's ridiculous. 37 points a game, 11 rebounds, 5.5 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 10 free throw attempts per game, and he's doing virtually everything within 8 feet.
Yeah. Yeah. It lends hope to Ben Simmons being able to have a similar impact without having a jumper. Sarah, how's it going with you? Your Spurs are doing Spurs things as always.
They are. And the whole Giannis thing, while it's beautiful to watch, it really just makes me miss Kawhi even more. That's really the only thing that's holding me down right now, but it's going to be okay.
That's reasonable. At least Rudy Gay is playing well in his absence. Mm-hmm. LaMarcus Aldridge has continued his hot start to the season. I know you'll give a shout-out to another Spurs player later on the episode. Let's start, guys. We have to start with the Phoenix Suns. I mean, we joked about them on our last episode because they got blown out by 40. They then proceeded not to play defense against the Los Angeles Lakers and made Lonzo Ball look like a superstar. They then got blown out by 40 again. Then shit really hit the fan Sunday, because first Eric Bledsoe tweeted out, quote, "I don't want to be here," which everyone naturally assumed meant, you know, the Phoenix Suns.
Hair salon.
Yeah, right. We'll get there. Then they go and fire their head coach, Earl Watson, on Sunday. They have Jay Triano is their interim head coach for the time being. Who knows if they're going to hire someone else or just let the inmates run the asylum all year. On Monday, Ryan McDonough, the Suns GM, met with reporters to talk about Bledsoe and talk about the firing of Watson. And as Mort alluded to, McDonough said he called Bledsoe, and Bledsoe's excuse for that tweet was he was at a hair salon with his lady, and he said he didn't want to be there. McDonough surprisingly did not believe that, and held him out from Monday's game, which they actually won against the Sacramento Kings, because of course they did. So I guess I don't even know where to start. I guess more we got to start with Bledsoe, and then we can talk about Earl Watson. So it sounds like, I mean, McDonough said he's not going to be with us moving forward. It sounds like Eric Bledsoe has played his last game in a Suns uniform. Yeah. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN reported teams are already, you know, circling the wagons and trying to come up with their best offers for Bledsoe. It sounds like a matter of when, not if, he'll be on the move. Where would you like to see him end up?
Well, I am digging the Milwaukee rumors, because remember about a year ago, the three of us had a discussion about Bledsoe, and we were kind of gauging where would he fit. And Milwaukee was the one destination the three of us, we really started talking about, like, oh, that would be good. Like, having this defensive-oriented athletic beast next to Giannis at the point, and finally give Milwaukee, like, a solid point guard who can do a bunch of different things. So those rumors excite me a lot. And the Denver rumors, obviously, excite me a lot as well, because we've talked about them, too. and they would also make a beautiful destination for him so they can avoid playing Emmanuel Mudiay.
Right. Yeah. So that begs the question. Denver, at least, you know, nothing is concrete, but the trade suggestions I've seen floated out there were for Denver, Emmanuel Mudiay plus Kenneth Faried. For Bledsoe, you're basically trading problems for problems because Faried's pissed that he's not in the rotation. Mudiay did not beat Jamal Murray for the starting spot. You know, at this point, probably best for him to have a fresh start. And then Bledsoe, obviously, needs to get the hell out of Phoenix as soon as possible. Do you think that's enough for Phoenix to pull the trigger, just Mudiay and Faried? Or would Denver need to attach some type of protected first-round pick?
I mean, no. Under normal circumstances, I would say no, that's not enough. But look at the summer we've just had. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Paul George was basically traded for a bag of Cheetos.
Yeah. Hey, Victor Oladipo's playing well.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's Indiana. He has the green light. I mean.
Right.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. It's just the supposed value that we put on stars, and make no mistake about it, like, Eric Bledsoe, healthy, is a star. Mm-hmm. He is terrific. And we can sit here and look at the numbers and go, you know what, this guy is worth more than that, this and that, but the market apparently has an idea all on its own. So I'm not sure. If Phoenix bites, I would love that deal for Denver, and I would hate it for Phoenix, because that's not getting a lot back. You're getting Faried, who's an energetic power forward with severe limitations, and mm-hmm. Emmanuel Mudiay, a guy who just can't shoot and doesn't seem to be able to run an offense without turning the ball over time and time again. Right. So on the surface, that seems cheap as hell.
Yeah. So then let's go to Milwaukee. What would you give up? Would you be willing to part with Malcolm Brogdon to get Eric Bledsoe?
Yes, I would.
Interesting.
I love Malcolm Brogdon. I think he's really, really good. But I would be willing to go that far. Like, I wouldn't start any conversation with Brogdon at all. It would mm-hmm. be my secret little, if he comes up and if that's the line in the sand that they're drawing, I'll be willing to give him up type mm-hmm. of deal. Like, John Henson and assets, that would be my starting point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you would do, like, John Henson and Brogdon for Bledsoe.
If push came to shove, I would probably go that far, yes. Even, and having said that, I love John Henson. I think he's got a pretty bum rap in Milwaukee. He's playing like 19 minutes a game right. for his career, which is ridiculous. So right. I want him to get out of Dodge as well.
Yeah, you might love John Henson, but Milwaukee clearly does not love John Henson. Yeah, so it does feel like he would be a logical piece to dangle. You know, when trade rumors start, you just see, like, all these random people come out of the woodwork on Twitter. So I saw someone yesterday say they, like, floated Greg Monroe and Thon Maker for Bledsoe, which just doesn't seem accurate. But no. The point is, unless Denver is willing to include Jamal Murray, which I don't think they would be, I feel like Milwaukee has more ammunition, like, more gettable ammunition to use in the Bledsoe deal than Denver, but frankly, I don't think I would rather see him in Denver than Milwaukee. Like, Milwaukee, I just want Giannis to continue putting up like 40, 15, and 5 every game. Like, I don't want to see another high usage player. I think Brogdon's actually a great fit there. Just let it roll. I mean, here's one other question. Would you do Henson and Jabari Parker for Eric Bledsoe?
Yes.
Would you rather do that than Henson and Brogdon?
As of right now, yes. Two ACL tears in the same knee, that has me worried. Like, obviously, that's just me commentating from the outside. I don't have the medical reports. And even if I did, I'm not smart enough to read a medical report. So, but let's assume for a second that I was, and I had access to all these great nuggets of information. I would, you know, gauge it differently, probably sitting there. But on the surface, two ACL tears in the same knee is just so not great. any stretch. So yeah, I would definitely do that. And to your point about Giannis and going all crazy, I would hate, that's partly why I also want Bledsoe in Milwaukee. I would just hate for Milwaukee to wear down Giannis. Mm. I don't want to Derrick Rose him at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He does need that little bit of extra help, and Chris Middleton has unfortunately struggled to start the season. So
Yeah. Tony Snell, your boy, your old Chicago Fred Tony Snell, actually. He's playing kind of well. Sarah, is there anywhere else that you would like to see Bledsoe end up aside from Denver and Milwaukee?
Oh, Spurs.
I did see that floated around, but yeah. I'm pretty good with the DeJounte and Prey that we got going on, the whole model. I'm good with it. I agree with you on both counts, Brian. I think trade-wise, it's probably a little more doable for Milwaukee, but I would prefer to see him in Denver and not in Milwaukee. Even then, I mean, you know, you don't really want to throw a super high usage guy in there either, because you want to be able to continue playing through Jokic as much as possible. But they do need another solid point guard on the roster for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? What are the teams that need
one? I saw like Clippers thrown out there, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, with Milos going down potentially, mm-hmm. yeah, but
Brooklyn. And
DeAndre
I guess.
Jordan wants him, right?
Right, yeah. DeAndre Jordan.
I forgot
does
about
want
that
him.
Tweet.
Yep. But yeah, so, I don't know, like Austin Rivers and
yeah,
another first round pick, because Doc Rivers hates first round picks.
I mean, Minnesota's kind of intriguing, but. There again, what would they do to make it happen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Sarah, what would you give up for the Spurs if you were, because the Spurs mm-hmm. was actually in the mix a little bit supposedly mm-hmm. for Chris Paul and a lot of point guards. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them go after Bledsoe simply because they might feel that Deonte is capable of also playing the two. I mean, I think he's interchangeable, so yeah. It might work out like that. So what would you give up if you're the Spurs?
Well, if you recall, I was not in on the whole Chris Paul train mm-hmm. because I didn't want to give anybody up. I'm really the wrong person to ask for that type of thing, because I kind of always favor, not just even for the Spurs, but like the question you were posed about Brogdon. Like you wanted to keep him too, but you mm-hmm. said if push came to shove, you'd do it. It's so hard for me. I always kind of prefer the guy who's there and who's kind of mm-hmm. played well in a spot than trading for this potential superstar that may or may not fit. Mm.
Your answer is Jeffrey LeVern in seconds.
Maybe, yeah.
It like 2 weeks ago, it would have been LaMarcus Aldridge, but now he's playing well.
I just told y'all that I love all the role players who come through the door. Like, I just told y'all Brandon Paul and Derek White I'm super excited about, who barely touched the floor so far. So, yeah, I'm the wrong one to ask.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, again, this is all speculation. I've seen Detroit floated out there, like you swap Reggie Jackson for Bledsoe, maybe throw in pieces. I don't know what else you would, like Tyson Chandler included, just to get mm-hmm. off his contract. But if you're Detroit, why do you want Tyson Chandler if you have Andre Drummond? The Cavs are always going to be out there because of the clutch sports connection. You can do like Shumpert, Channing Frye, and I think the earliest pick they could trade that isn't the Brooklyn pick, which they are not trading for Eric Bledsoe, is 2021. So maybe if Phoenix adopts like a really long-term view, but I would think you would want something more along the developmental timelines of Booker, Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, Josh Jackson, than Shumpert and Channing Frye. Brooklyn, I guess, now that Jeremy Lin is out. Mm. Like... Mm. I don't know. I don't think Brooklyn wants to trade any more draft picks, but you know, maybe you offer up a guy like Caris LeVert, and what I don't know what else. I guess salary filler, Trevor Booker, and see. You know, I don't know if that's more appealing than a deal like that. Is that more appealing? More do you think like Caris LeVert and Booker than Moutier and Fareed?
For me personally, yeah, but keep in mind, I absolutely love those guys you just mentioned. Trevor Booker, right. One of my favorite players. Caris LeVert, lots of potential, was great at Michigan, now seems to be finally healthy. So I think he's going to have a great career. So, but that's just me personally. I'm kind of going the other way around as well and asking Phoenix, like, what would they like? What if they would like immediate salary relief?
The Bulls?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it maybe even be able to attach Brandon Knight. Mm. And then the Bulls give up, like, some sort of deal that is easily movable, like Nikola Mirotic, where there's an out after next season.
Yeah. Oh, that would actually be interesting. Huh. Yeah. I mean, Lord knows the Bulls need more point guards. So getting two more would be...
Yeah, why not, right?
They're taking small ball to the logical extreme, and they're just going to run five point guards out there.
Well, the incentive of the Bulls is not to hang on to Bledsoe necessarily. So you get him for the season, and then hopefully you build his trade value up, and then you, in the summer, see what you can get. Even if you only get, like, a protected future first, or, like, a pick in the 20s or something like that for a team that might be... under their cap, you can theoretically do it right after the draft going into free agency. So,
right.
I mean, there would be some possibilities there, but the point being is if you can take Bledsoe and Knight off the Suns roster, it could be Tyson Chandler as well, like one of the two, to give Phoenix more salary relief, it might be worth, you know, considering for Phoenix, because that would make them players
in
free agency.
Right. I mean... in theory, I don't know who's signing up to go to that.
That's the thing. How well has that gone for them recently?
Right. But okay, we can all agree. Going, you know, betting on free agency is just fool's gold, really. I mean, it's been a problem for so many teams that go the cap space route. It's just it doesn't really pan out. It's a minuscule percentage where it ends up working. So
yeah. I want to draw a differentiation there because I got into an argument recently about like the LaMarcus Aldridge extension and why, you know, it could come back to bite the Spurs down the line. And like I totally agree that most times that cap space is fool's gold, and like in the Bulls case next summer it's gonna be in the Suns case it will be. But like if you're a team like the Spurs and you have Kawhi, you have Pop, you have a team that hasn't won fewer than 50 games in what, like 37 years? There it's like a little more enticing. Like there you, if you actually have cap space, there's reason for top free agents to come and take those meetings and be like, oh, okay, you know, it's the Spurs. Like it has more cachet than the Suns, the Bulls, the Knicks, the Kings, even the Sixers, unless you're gonna like wildly overpay. So like in general, I totally agree. I just, you know...
For certain teams. Yeah, I would agree with that. Definitely. If you're a good, well-run team, it makes sense. But that's the thing. Right. And neither the Bulls and the Knicks, like, those teams who routinely go after cap space are usually pretty poorly run teams.
Right. So, Sarah, I want to ask about Earl Watson, too, because we've joked about him before as being... not a great coach, and especially not a great coach with a super young roster. Did you expect it to go to shit this quickly?
No, but I mean, that start was atrocious. I mean, you really can't overstate how poorly they played, how bad they looked. I think, you know, that's been mentioned that everyone around the league, I think, expected them to not be good. I'd probably be one of the very worst teams in the league. But I don't know that there's really any excuse for looking that bad. Like, they didn't compete at all whatsoever. Right. So, I kind of understand it. I don't ever, you know, celebrate somebody losing their job. But and it also makes no sense, as has been pointed out too. Like, if you're going to get to that point this quickly, I guess they didn't expect to look that bad either. But, you know, yeah, it makes sense to do that over the summer and not... you know, lose a whole training camp with the coach that you're not going to be keeping. So none of it makes sense. It's certainly the problems are far deeper than Earl Watson. So that's the part where it's not fair. He didn't put the roster together. So, but But yeah, they didn't look ready to compete, and some of that has to fall on his shoulders, I guess.
Yeah. People have whispered, not even whispered, just said outright that Robert Sarver is a terrible owner. And more, this goes back to your point that you've made repeatedly about how team success or failure really starts from the top down. It starts from the ownership level, then GM, then coach, then players. So, like, if your owner is toxic, if you have a Sarver, when you had Donald Sterling with the Clippers, if you have James Dolan with the Knicks, you're starting way behind the eight ball, and you need a lot of things to fall in place to actually, you know, get back to a level where you can compete. So, you know, Sarah, as you said, like, it makes no sense. You know, you knew going into the season, the Suns, I would be really surprised if I found a single ranking where they weren't mentioned among the bottom two, bottom three. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone knew this Suns team was going to be garbage. As you said, I don't think anyone expected them to lose by 40 points twice in their first three games. And then, like, you know, Matt Moore of CBS had clips from the Lakers-Suns game where they literally just made a layup line for Lonzo. Like, they did not play defense at all. So, yeah, like, they played really poorly, perhaps even worse than expected. But no one expected them to be competitive this year. So to make Watson the sacrificial lamb three games into the season, I think it just speaks to the culture of dysfunction around there. And more, as you said, like, if they go the free agent route, who's going to take that money? Mm. Like, you're going to have to wildly overpay someone, and you're just going to set your team further back. So, you know, like, the Suns, in theory, this is, you know, they could do their version of the process right now, because they have a bunch of guys on rookie contracts. Like, now is the time to get veterans on 2 or 3 year deals before you have to pay Booker, Jackson, Bender, Marquise Chris, but they're the Suns. So, like, who wants to actually go there right now? I don't think anyone does.
No, I mean, we should really add them to the pile. I had like a three list or a list of three teams that I thought had toxic ownership, the Bulls, the Knicks, and Sacramento. Mm-hmm. But we can add Phoenix to the list, and honestly, Sacramento, for now, it seems like Vivek Ranadive is finally shutting up, which is huge progress for them.
Yeah.
A so simple tweak, yet so very effective.
Right. Let your basketball people run the basketball department.
Unless you're the Bulls, which case you need to step in next. It's kind of like the opposite problem. So ownerships, the thing with me is, the NBA kind of figure out, okay, you can actually get better by throwing a lot of money to coaches as well. Like, we are going to just empower coaches. We're going to pay them a lot of money so we have, like, a structure going on for our team. And we can also pay the best executives a lot of money. But the one thing you can't really change are owners. Well, you can, but that would have to come with the owner's consent. And no owner in the NBA is going, oh, well, shucks, I just effed it all up. I'm going to sell the team because I'm not very good. No. Mm-hmm. No. None of them have that low egos. They all think they're doing a hell of a job, and that's a huge concern.
Right. Yeah. So, do either of you have any idea for coaches who would be a good fit in Phoenix, or is it just a lost cause this season?
Well, I don't have a specific name, but I would like to go through the roster, you know, the college ranks, probably. I think you have seen a lot of good coaches come up from college programs, or internationally as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Stealing Sarah, Spurs executive, or a Spurs assistant.
I was going to say, Becky Hammon, is it time for her?
Oh, yeah.
Don't do that to Becky. I was going to say, I'd love to see Monty Williams get another shot, too, at head coaching, but I don't want to do that to him either, so.
Right.
It's a tough situation at the moment. Of course, you're not going to fall into any great situations, unless you're Steve Kerr, maybe, but.
Right. Yeah maybe Byron Scott is always available. He handled the Lakers' young talent so well.
So how many days had it been since the last coaching fire? Was it 511 or something like that?
I don't know the exact, but I know, like, we went the entire 2016-17 season without one, which was very rare.
We're getting back to norm. Because
feels like this is not the last one.
Oh, definitely. Like, Jeff Hornacek is probably on the bubble. Fred Hoiberg, like, at some point, you know, you have a couple teams there.
Alvin Gentry too.
Oh, right, Gentry.
Through no fault of his own. I mean, yeah. Again, Alvin Gentry is in a very similar spot where it's like he didn't build the roster, but he's going to take the blame for it because they only have 3.5 guys who can play basketball. All right, let's move to the other big news of the week. Dwayne Wade, Mort, we talked about it last episode, and yeah, I think it was 2 games into the season, and we said, you know, the Dwayne Wade, Derrick Rose pairing was not a functional fit. Derrick Rose then sprained his ankle. Jose Calderon moved in the starting lineup temporarily, but Dwayne Wade is now willingly accepting a demotion to the bench. J.R. Smith is going back into the starting lineup, even with Calderon still starting and Derrick Rose still sidelined. I'm assuming are you surprised it happened this quickly?
Yeah, that's the only thing I'm surprised at, that this happened this quickly. I'm not surprised that it went to crap because it was a bad idea to begin with. So, yeah. Also kind of surprised that Dwayne himself was willing to like be this sacrificial lamb in regards to roster chemistry. That is not a skill he showcased before. So right. Good on him for finally realizing that he's old.
Yeah. Also, I mean, we said it last time. Like, I think he fits better as you want shooters around LeBron. So he didn't fit great there. He's still going to play minutes next to LeBron. Like, that's not a concern. But you want shooters in that starting lineup. And he fits well as a second unit ball handler. Like, that's a perfect role for him. He can command the second unit, run wild with Kyle Korver and Jeff Green and Tristan Thompson. And like, they're still gonna, I mean, it's better balance, better roster balance overall. So like you, I'm not surprised it happened. I am surprised it happened this quickly. And again, like you, I'm pleasantly surprised that Dwayne was the one who, the impetus for that change. I think that speaks volumes to, you know, the type of culture the Cavs have, at least with LeBron there, where, you know, guys are like, yeah, right, for this year and this year only. But, you know, guys are willing to make big sacrifices. Like, Dwayne signed for a minimum deal there, and he's willing to come off the bench. Like, he doesn't really give a damn. He just wants to do whatever it takes to win a ring and, like, make, at least get back to the finals, where, you know, now that Boston's beat up, the Cavs should have a pretty easy road back to the finals as long as Greek Freak doesn't just completely annihilate all worlds.
You know what? Milwaukee, I said that they were like 5 looking in.
Yeah.
Screw that. It's the big 5 now.
Yeah.
Yep.
I completely agree. I mean, Boston has real depth concerns, especially Marcus Smart is like dealing with an ankle now. I know like Milwaukee does too, I guess. Like if Greek Freak goes down, they're completely screwed, but it would not surprise me at all. We spoke with this in our season preview with Matt Moore about, like, you know, how we thought Cleveland, Boston, Toronto, Washington were locked in as the top 4, and he asked what team could sneak in, and we said Milwaukee. Like, I don't even think it's controversial now to say Milwaukee could be a top 4 team. Like, with Giannis playing this well, like, he single-handedly murdered the Trailblazers the other night.
Oh, yeah, I mean, with the 44? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I just, if he continues playing at this level, not only is he the MVP front runner, but I would not be at all surprised if Milwaukee sneaks into the top 4 and pushes Boston down to 5.
Well, rest in peace, your mentions.
True.
Is that hot a take, though? I mean, I could see it.
Well, no, but it's completely just logical. People. But do, I mean, yeah. Just
gotcha.
Celtics Twitter, right?
Right. Right. I did have someone, because goddamn you, James Holis. I need to reverse shout out to James Holis, because the Celtics and the Sixers played on Friday, and after, like, Embiid played like total ass, as he said, or in his own words. he shot like 4 of 16 from the field, and then James tweeted some stupid shit like, "Oh, Aaron Baines and Al Horford had him in shackles." And I was like, come on, bro. He's clearly just out of shape. Like, shut up. And then these Celtics fans actually came into my mentions and were defending James when he was clearly just like, he didn't mean it, guys. He was just being a troll. But then these people were like, you're just being a fanboy. He's not out of shape. And I'm like, no, he is, like, on the record. Both him and Brett Brown have said he's out of shape. This isn't me, like, it's Al Horford. Like, Al Horford is not a good defender. Al Horford didn't do shit against Joel Embiid. He just didn't want to drive into the basket because he got winded within 5 minutes.
Oh, James is the best troll on Twitter. We should really give him an award.
Yeah, he really... I started DMing him all of these people, and he just started laughing at me.
We got to reverse your reverse shout-out, because that rant was worth it.
There you go. Alright, let's go to the Lonzo Ball show. He made his debut Thursday night. Patrick Beverley drank his milkshake, just absolutely destroyed him. He did play well against the Suns, who, as we mentioned, played no defense. And then kind of middle of the road in his third game. So, Sarah, impressions of Lonzo on his first week in the NBA?
I think that's, you know, this is kind of what we can expect, a microcosm of the whole season. He's going to be up and down a little bit, especially when he gets up against a defender tenacious like that. Of course, luckily for him, Patrick Beverley is probably the top of that ladder. So you've already seen the worst of the worst your first time out. That's actually probably a good thing. You know, go ahead and get your feet to the fire right away. But he's, you know, we know what he's capable of. He's going to be able to make nice passes, get teammates involved. His shot is as volatile as ever. Sometimes it's going to go down. Sometimes it's going to hit nothing but backboard. And, you know, it's just going to be that way all year. He's, like I said, he is going to struggle at times when they really guard him tight. And he's going to have trouble getting the shot off at times, because of the way that he brings it in front of his face. It's such a strange, such a strange shot. But, I mean, the good news for him is people probably won't be guarding him that tight most of the time. So it'll be there. He's just got to try to knock it down.
Yeah. Yeah, he went 1 of 6. I have the numbers pulled up. 1 of 6 for 3 points against the Clippers. But he did bounce back, nearly triple-double against the Suns, and then almost triple-doubled again against the Pelicans on Sunday. 2 points, 2 rebounds short. So he's still actually looking for his first triple-double, but he has flirted with it in the past 2 games. Mort, we're not going to bring up Voldemort, but
right,
he did say, you know, after I think it was after the Pelicans game, right? Where, yeah, it was. He said, the Wizards better beware, because Lonzo ain't losing again, not this week. And then Marcin Gortat replied, man, please, John Wall will torture him for 48 minutes, crying face, crying face, crying face, crying face.
Yeah.
So, do you expect, like, is Voldemort putting Lonzo in an even worse spot? Like, do you think other NBA guards are, like, actively looking forward to the first time they play him so they could just shut him down?
Well, you don't even need to ask me that. You should just ask Patrick Beverley, who more or less answered your question. He was like, guys are going to go at him. Like, and there are a lot of people out there who said that, you know, Voldemort has basically ruined his rookie season because by uttering all this stupid shit for the last year or 6 months or whatever it was, you have like a plethora of strong defensive guards who's going to take that as motivation. Now, let me just clear up something here, because Twitter seems to be a little bit confused about it. In particular, Lakers Twitter. It's not that the motivation is usually lacking, but every NBA player has taken a page out of Michael Jordan's book. Michael had to like rile himself up. He had to find some sort of slight to get him going. Like, if some dude just said something to him, like if he was having like a pedestrian game, he was like, oh snap, I'm going to kill you. I am going to literally murder you. And it's the same today. Like, players go through 82 games. They have to find something to get their juices flowing. Look, it's not about Voldemort. It's about what it represents. It represents an opportunity for those guys to look themselves in the mirror when facing Lonzo and going, oh yeah, I've got something to play for tonight. I've got a chance here to really showcase my skills. I'm going to go out and get myself an A++++ game, and I'm going to murder this young man because that's where I'm at. It's not Lonzo specifically. He's mm-hmm. just being used as a vessel for motivation.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. I mean, that was a big concern, like even dating back to the draft, was would Voldemort affect his draft stock, and it clearly didn't. But I think it's clear that, as you said, Mort, like NBA players, it's a long season. Like, it's hard to get up for games, especially against crappy teams like the mm-hmm. Lakers. Now, at least opposing point guards are,
circling that date.
Yeah, like they're actively looking forward to just ruining this kid's life for 48 minutes.
I can't wait for when Marcus Smart has to play against Lonzo Ball. Like, we all talked about Patrick Beverley. I want Marcus Smart to just look at this young dude and go tell Brad Stevens, when Lonzo checks in, that's when I check in.
Yeah. Oh my God, that will be fun. I mean, like, hell, when the Spurs play him, Danny Green's just going to be glued to him all game. Minnesota, you got to figure Jimmy Butler takes it.
Oh, like, Jimmy, you know what? Jimmy, he's not a talker when it comes to that, but I know this dude, he goes up for those matchups. You can bet your ass Jimmy is going to go to Tibbs, and he's going to go, can I guard Lonzo tonight? And right. Tibbs is going to go, sure, Jimmy, go ahead. Go. Or is Tibbs going to say, go get it.
Yeah. Right.
So we can't let this segment pass without the Snoop Dogg quote, though.
Oh, yeah.
His dad threw him in a lion's den with pork chop drawers on.
Yeah.
Oh. And the thing about it is, like, back when you could argue that, you know, none of us really appreciated his methods, but okay, you could say he's raising draft stock, or he's raising profile, or at least getting people to talk about the kid, and in that sense maybe it was helping. At this point, I don't really think there's any way that all this talk can help Lonzo's career. It's mm-hmm. at this point you're really only putting a target on his back. So I don't understand why you keep up with that. Now it really feels like it's about you and not mm-hmm. about your kid, and that, to me, that's kind of gross.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, hopefully he's got one kid at UCLA now and then a kid who he's now homeschooling, so hopefully he, like, falls off the map after the next couple of games and we don't have to speak his name anymore. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, Mort, as you, I too am now looking forward to Marcus Smart eating his lunch.
Oh yeah!
I mean, hell, the Sixers the night of the draft. You know, I think like Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid tweeted Ben Simmons, I hope you dunk on him so hard his daddy comes running onto the court. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm excited for that game too. That's coming up.
Yeah, but it's so weird. Like, I'm a father as well, and.
Yeah.
Obviously, my kid is the most awesome kid in his entire class, but I'm not going to say it. Right. I'm not going to go into the classroom and look at the other kids and go, you know what? Compared to my kid, you all suck. Like, that's right. That's not being a good parent, and especially not when it's on a national scale and on a global interest level. It's so dumb. Like, he might have given him more sponsorship opportunities, but he mm-hmm. might have ruined his rookie season, which is, like, you know, the first day of school. And let's think a little bit ahead here. If Lonzo has a really poor rookie season, partly because of this, that could go into his head, and that could actually negatively affect the rest of his career. Like, granted, worst case scenario, still a scenario.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm going to list off some of their upcoming opponents. This week alone, Washington, Toronto, Utah. So that's John Wall, Kyle Lowry, Ricky Rubio.
And, yeah, Utah's defense, generally speaking. Yeah.
Right. Yep. They've got Memphis in early November.
Oh, Boston. Mike Conley.
Yeah, Mike Conley, right? Washington again, Milwaukee. They have the Sixers in mid-November. Like, they have a brutal stretch of upcoming matchups for that kid.
Oh, Giannis switches out on Lonzo.
Yep. Or Tony Snell on him.
Oh, yeah. Or even Brogdon. He's a good defender as well.
Or Middleton.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have,
they have plenty. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be. Voldemort really better go disappear soon.
Did you guys see
his kid is in a world of hurt.
Did Did you guys see the open shots he got in Phoenix? I know you alluded to
it.
Like, the three of the four threes that he made were just wide, wide open. Like, Bledsoe and company went under the screen routinely. And, like, okay, here's the thing. I'm going to give Lonzo credit for at least making the shots. That's his job. Like, if someone goes under the screen, you better pull up and make the jumper. And he did. Mm-hmm. So, credit to Lonzo for that. But it's not a sign necessarily of what's to come. It's it's just the Suns being that damn awful.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I mean, I would encourage everyone to go find Matt Moore's piece on this from the other day, because he has video clips of the Suns, just how apathetic they were on defense, and it was really, like, it was a spectacle. I've never seen an NBA team not care on defense that much. It was really, truly impressive. Okay, next we are going to do... You guys pure pressured me into this. I really didn't want to talk about this because I'm already more nervous about it than I would like to be. But we need to talk about Markelle Fultz. You know, the free throw struggles are still real. He did hit two against Boston on Friday and got a loud ovation from the Philly crowd, which was...
That's just mean.
It was just so depressing. It was really bad. But he missed two against Washington. He shot 4 of 8 from the line against Toronto. Didn't take one against Detroit on Monday. He's coming off the bench. He hasn't taken a single three-pointer all year. How worried should I be, Mort? Like, what... Is there any precedent for a guy who shot 40%+ from college, showed off 3-point range in summer league, you know, had this in high school too. Like, this was one of his strengths coming into the NBA, and now it's just gone. Like, is it the shoulder injury, or is it something worse that I should be far more concerned about?
Looks like the shoulder to me. I don't think that he should be written off as, you know, having the yips or whatever you call it, or not having the ability to shoot from NBA range, etc., etc. His shoulder seems to be really messing his game up right now. Like, that free throw release, that's not something that you do if you have a good shoulder. It just doesn't. Like, I can't even call them Draft Express anymore because the guys work for ESPN, but they still keep their Facebook updated as Draft Express, and sometimes they post video. And I think it was them that today posted a video from his Team USA. Might have been them or the FIBA Facebook account, actually. They posted a video of him taking some free throws in international competition, which was very smooth and, like, no hiccups, and, you know, everything was just really, really smooth. You don't make that change. You don't make that significant a change if you aren't hurting, is my point. So I'm chalking it up to the shoulder, and I think he should be sitting down. I don't see why he should be playing if the shoulder is that bad. Then you risk, you know, aggravating it. You risk him getting into a bad confidence territory where he can't make a shot and it festers on him mentally. I would just sit his ass down until he's healthy. Lord knows Philly has experience doing that.
Right. Yeah, I know. That's where I've been for most of the year as well. Like, I do think, like you, I think it's the shoulder rather than, like, the yips. Maybe there's something mental now. Like, you know, it just seems... It seems like it has to be something physical for him not to have attempted a three-pointer in 4 games. Like, that just doesn't... It doesn't make sense if it's anything aside from him physically being unable to, you know, whatever, raise his shoulder in that way, or just, like, take that shot without feeling major discomfort. I don't know why I'm gonna give the Sixers their medical staff the benefit of the doubt, given their experience over the past couple years, allowing Joel Embiid to play with a torn meniscus, allowing Robert Covington to play with a torn meniscus. They don't deserve it, but I'm gonna hope that they have correctly diagnosed whatever is going on, and that there is no risk of aggravating that injury or making it worse by him continuing to play through it. You know, I don't know if that's true or not, because the Sixers haven't said anything about... They haven't released specifics about what the injury is. Dan Feldman of NBC Sports, who covers the Pistons, he had an article today about, you know, kind of what's going on with Fultz, and Fultz did tell him the shoulder is what's causing him to adjust his free throw stroke. He said, quote, "I do what I've got to do to get the ball on the rim," which doesn't seem all that great. But more to your point about, like, why are they letting him continue to play? I thought toward the end of Dan's article, there was something interesting. He said, I guess he spoke with Brett Brown as well, and Brown apparently wants Fultz to focus on everything but his jumper. Defense, running the offense, getting to hit his spots in the pick and roll, which frankly he has been doing well. Like, aside from not taking a jumper and having, like, no, you know, there, he's passed up wide open shots. Like, there are other parts of his game that he has been flashing that, you know, it's like, oh, well, when he starts shooting a jump shot, he'll be a good prospect again. So that's still there. It's not like he's a total bust. But Sarah, like, where do you stand on this? Do you think the Sixers... do you think it makes sense for them to continue playing him and letting him get NBA reps while he deals with this? Or should they just sit him down and let him get healthy?
Yeah, the latter of the two would be my my preference. I think, yeah, I 100% understand wanting to get him NBA experience, but I just don't think it's the most important thing right now. And obviously, I don't know what's going on with him injury-wise, but from all the quotes that we're reading, it just sounds bad. I mean, if you have to shoot your free throw that differently because your shoulder hurts that bad to shoot it the way you normally would, that to me is like a giant neon flashing sign that, you know, you maybe should not be shooting the ball then. And I get it. Supposedly, they don't really want him shooting. They just want him, you know, I guess, dribbling around out there, but... nah, I don't. That doesn't sound good to me. It's worrisome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Fultz has said his shoulder is getting better and he's closer to 100%. So I hope, you know, hopefully soon he'll just be back to his normal self and we'll start to see the prospect that everyone fell in love with this past spring. I think there's definitely a lot of Schadenfreude going along, especially from the Boston side, like, oh, this guy, you know, look at Jason Tatum, he's so great. Fultz looks like a total bust. Ha 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 ha. Like,
he's
I
not
even
a bust.
That.
That's crazy. Yeah. He can play. He can shoot too. That's what's really nuts about it. We've seen him shoot,
right.
So
right.
That's. I don't think that will continue to be a problem. He just has to get healthy.
Yeah, yeah. I think he needs to get healthy. He can get his confidence back. I'm not super panicked about him yet. Like, it's admittedly, like, mildly concerning. It's not how you want the number one overall pick to start his career, but luckily the Sixers have so much else going on. You know, JJ Redick's playing extremely well. Ben Simmons obviously is, like, just lighting the world on fire. Embiid had an awful game against Boston but hung 30 on Drummond last night. Jared Bayless is, like, playing shockingly. You know, he got hurt very early last season. I think he played two or three games and then missed the rest of the year. So he's been filling in for Fultz in the starting lineup, and he's been doing the token, like, play off the ball, hit a couple threes, make a couple dickhead turnovers, and call it a day. So the Sixers have some good stuff going on. There was just a lot of panic. You know, obviously, I follow a lot of Philly guys, and when they started 0-3, there was a lot of panic in the streets, but, like, look who they played. They played the Wizards, the Celtics, and the Raptors. I mean... it's gonna be, you know, that they were never going to win 50 plus games. They were always going to be in a slog for the number 8 seed. The Wizards game was close. They had a chance to win it. They're relying on a bunch of rookies and second year players, and those guys make careless mistakes, especially toward the end of games in high pressure situations, which is what happened in Washington. So that won't be the last time it happens, but, you know, they played Detroit on Monday night, got their first win. Like, they'll be fine. It's just right now is the time where a lot of fan bases tend to overreact, and Philly people are already just baseline irrational for their sports. So everyone, in the words of Aaron Rodgers, R-E-L-A-X, relax, chill out. Fultz is going to be fine. The Sixers are going to be fine.
I actually have an anecdote here.
Oh, yeah.
And this is going to show my age. Because during LeBron's rookie season back in 2003, going into the year, there are a lot of concerns. Does LeBron have a jump shot? That was the primary thing about him coming into the league. And it took him until the seventh game to really showcase like a shooting prowess. It was against New York, and he hit 3 for 3 from downtown and took a lot of mid-range jumpers that looked clean. After that one game, you know, the media kind of eased up on him. Like, you know, you saw headlines going, well, he can shoot. He followed that up with shooting 40% and 50% of the next two games from behind the arc. And that's all she wrote. After that, the whole concern about LeBron being able to shoot from the outside was lessened. Like, it wasn't gone, but it was lessened. Because just the fact that he had a couple of breakouts. So, Markel, well, we should just wait for him to go, like, 4 for 6 from the behind the arc for one game. And then suddenly, that whole bubble is going to burst a little bit. And that's going to buy him some breathing room. So, yes, relax is the key word here.
Yeah, I'm doing, like, the prayer hands emoji right now. Just, I want that to come sooner than later. But in the meantime, enjoy Ben Simmons, who got his first career triple-double on Monday night.
And then all Philly fans are used to waiting.
That's true. I know. We got Markelle Fultz is playing this year. That's already
way ahead of schedule. Start.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move to our Where Amazing Happens segment, where we're gonna let's just do a quick bullet point version where we highlight some of the more notable positive stories in the NBA over the past week. We already shouted out Giannis, but Andrew Wiggins with the game winner against OKC. I mean, he's, you know, he's had a decent start to the season. It's a good time to be on the Andrew Wiggins may have been worth $150 million camp.
Shit defense, though, if you saw like the last possession.
I know. Well, also, there was a moving screen that Carl Anthony Towns had that went uncalled. So, probably shouldn't have happened. But, yeah, I mean, that's the early favorite for game of the year, Minnesota OKC, because Carmelo came down, hit a go-ahead three-pointer off a Russ pass, and then Wiggins came right back, 4 seconds left, dribbled halfway across the court, sinks a cold-blooded game winner. So shout out Andrew Wiggins. You know, the first two games, he really did nothing outside of scoring, but that game against OKC, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 threes, that's kind of the more well-rounded impact that we're hoping to see out of Andrew Wiggins this year. So, here, fingers crossed that he keeps that up.
Thank God for Jimmy Butler.
More, anyone you'd like to shout out?
In terms of where amazing happens?
Yeah.
I mean, I've already mentioned him, and it was Giannis. I have one guy I want to shout out, but I'm leaving that for my crush section.
Okay.
But I think we should mention Giannis again, because he's just been utterly ridiculous. You know what? I will shout out the rookie class in general as well. It's been decent. It's been a lot better than last year, which is probably very easy to be better than last year, admittedly. But just a lot of solid performances, players who seem to be sticking to the game plan and looking ready. Even guys who like missing their jump shots are, you know, developing in other ways or in other areas and contributing there. So I'm really digging the rookie class, and of course Ben Simmons as well, as you mentioned before, even though he was from last year. Good year for the rookies. And in the same vein, God damn it, is it unfortunate that Teo Dosic went down and is out indefinitely, because he is so much fun.
Right. Yeah. Reverse shout out to all of the injuries out there. Oh, I listed them so Monday in my waiver wire column on FanSided, and I like had to keep going back and adding more, because it was like, then I was like, oh yeah, Rodney Hood also got hurt. Oh yeah, Miles Turner has a concussion. Oh yeah, Hassan Whiteside's out.
Dennis Schroeder's out. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Dennis Schroeder. Like, just an unreal number. Thankfully, only a couple that will knock people out for the year, like Hayward and Lynn are done for the year. I think that was it in terms of like season-ending ones, but even Chris Paul for a couple weeks. You mentioned Nico earlier, and then a bunch of guys, you know, Ronnie Hood.
Yeah,
I really want that dude to stay healthy. I'm gonna have a lot of egg on my face if he does not stay healthy, because I really thought this was his breakout year.
Yeah, this opening week has sucked let's just be frank about it when it comes to injuries. It's
Oh, yeah.
Way too many bodies have gone down for the first week. I mean, I am getting tired of the word indefinitely.
Me too. Me too. I also want to... You're taking an early lead, Mort, on our Brooklyn Nets bet. 2-1 Yeah, they beat up on a bunch of crap teams, but 2-1 is 2-1
It's the East, man. I told you. They are... I know. I mean, I'm not even surprised.
Well, who they... So they lost to the Pacers, but they beat the... Yeah, they beat the Magic and the Hawks at home.
Exactly. So...
Woo!
Yeah, one party, but I mean, parrot. Hey, look, and they're going to get, like, 3 wins against Chicago. They're probably going to take Indiana at a second point. And look, the East is so bad, man. It's so bad. They're probably also going to lock up 2 wins against Phoenix. So...
Yeah, well, yeah, they and actually Dallas. I'm looking at their upcoming schedule right now, and they're gonna have they're gonna be 7-4 by the end of this.
Yeah,
Orlando, within the next 2 weeks, they have Orlando, at Knicks versus Phoenix, at Lakers, at Phoenix.
I'm gonna hire Denzel Washington to come on this podcast to say King Kong ain't got shit on me when I prove to you that they are worth a playoff
they're
spot.
They're gonna be 7-3 because their only hard games in that stretch are versus Cleveland and versus Denver.
And Cleveland got spanked by what 20?
The Magic, yeah.
Yeah, by the Orlando, yeah. So
yeah, they're the other ones who I want to shout out. Like, I really thought the Magic. You know, we just have shit on them for 2 straight years and just thought of them as an Eastern Conference also ran. But they came in with an impressive season open win against Miami, spanked the Cavaliers by 21 without Aaron Gordon in the lineup. Their only loss was by 5 to the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, we're going to find out a lot about this team in the next couple weeks because they have Sarah there against your Spurs on Friday. They've got dates with 3-game road trips, Charlotte, New Orleans, Memphis coming up. Boston's on the schedule next Sunday, so we'll see how legit they are pretty soon. But really, I mean, Nick Vucevic, especially, lighting it up early on in the year.
All right, to be fair, because we just trashed Lonzo a little bit for getting open looks against Phoenix. Yeah, Vucevic, I saw the Brooklyn game where he got 41.
Yeah.
Those were just wide-ass open looks from the outside. He went 6 of 8 from downtown and a lot of shots from inside the arc as well. He was wide fucking open all game long. Like, credit for him for knocking it down and everything, but he did not have to work a lot to get the 41.
You're telling me Timofey Mozgov isn't a rotation player?
Hey, I never said Brooklyn was perfect.
Sarah, anyone you want to shout out for Where Amazing Happens?
Well, you kind of mentioned it in passing, but I'm wondering if you didn't put the Ben Simmons triple-double in here just so one of us would mention it. That's okay. I got your back.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was pretty nice. Like you said, these showing flashes of the potential, at least, to be able to impact games similarly to how Giannis is without having that outside shot. Although I watched a few of the clips, I'm like, what the hell is Detroit actually trying to do? A couple, at least twice, guarding the Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid pick and roll.
Yeah.
They sort of, like, two guys both stepped out on Ben around the three-point line. I'm like, guys... I'm like, he's not going to pull that, so they just let Embiid go to the rim. He just dives, and he's, you know, wide open for the lob. I don't know what that was about, but like maybe you're trying to get ball pressure, but it was sort of half-hearted. I don't know. Anyway, we won't talk about that right now. I also wanted to shout out Giannis for rewarding my vote of confidence from last week's pod. And I said, yeah, he probably needs to move into that top five. And because of the personal preference of being able to do it from end to end, and that's exactly how he closed out that Portland game. You know, he got fouled and missed those 2 free throws, but then he comes down and rips CJ McCollum, which may or may not have been a foul, but it looked pretty good. And then the block on Nurkic, so and that's it. That's the type of stuff I'm talking about, and I just love seeing a player who can do that. Also, I guess I kind of want to save it for we're planning our sort of early season surprises to record later, so I'll just throw a little teaser out there. But, you know, Marc Gasol and the Memphis bench need some love. Blake Griffin needs some love. So I'm looking forward to talking about them.
Yeah, stay tuned for that later this week. Yeah, I'm glad, Sarah, I'm glad you took the Ben Simmons stuff. I didn't want to say that he was the first rookie since Oscar Robertson to have 10, 10, and 5 in his first four games. But since you brought it up.
Just had it locked and loaded.
Right. Right. Yeah, I'm writing something about him for B-Ball Breakdown later in the week, so stay tuned for that as well.
No, you writing about the Sixers?
Dude, Jesse pitched it to me. I didn't even have to say it this time. he's been just so fun to watch. Also, shout out to Joel Embiid, because he you know how he like picked a fight the other day with Hassan Whiteside in the preseason after the Sixers beat the Pistons? He apparently said Andre Drummond plays no defense, and then Bleacher Report tweeted out that quote, and Andre Drummond tweeted back and said, "See you December 2nd." So I'm pretty excited. Like, Joel Embiid is his own Voldemort. Like, he is his own hype man, and he is starting a war against every other Eastern Conference center, which I am all here for.
Joel Embiid is that dude who has a podcast and goes in to rate his own podcast and writes his own review.
He's the best, and I love him. Never change, Joel. Stay healthy, please. All right, let's wrap things up with our crush segment, which is we're going to shine a spotlight on a player who deserves more recognition than he's getting. So,
it's been
Sarah,
a while.
It has been, I know. We finally have real basketball to talk about again. So, Sarah, I'm going to let you start things off, because if you didn't take this guy, I was going to.
Yeah, I usually wouldn't pick a Spur, but you know, I felt obligated. Like you said, one of us had to, so.
Yeah,
it's DeJounte, obviously. Been playing incredibly well so far, even better than I expected, and I expected him to be pretty good, but to right off the bat be so good, it's very impressive. I think last night he had 16 points, 15 rebounds, 6 assists. Just ridiculous. The rebounding is something that I probably should have seen coming, but I didn't even think about. He's really, really used his length on the glass, and also defensively. He's had active hands every game. He's already, you know, 3 games, small sample, but he's averaging a steal a game and almost just a shade under 10 rebounds a game. And his assist numbers are a little better than I expected so far, too. He's just under 5 a game and 13 points. But what I love is he just does give the Spurs this other dynamic that they didn't really have, mainly with the rebounding and the length defensively. He really adds to that. You know, they already have, of course, Kawhi's not playing right now, but Danny Green, Kawhi, they added Rudy Gay. So there's something brewing there that's really, really interesting defensively. With the length that they have. We've seen it already. They've had a lot of deflections and a lot of steals, just having their hands in passing lanes, which I don't think teams are used to from them, even as much as we've seen so far. And he's just, like I said, he also, the thing we were looking forward to was he could push pace, you know. But and Spurs are still playing at an extremely slow pace overall, but he can still shock you at times, take it off the glass and go. He's helping with the offensive rebounds as well. They just have to be mindful of that when he's in there. Somebody's going to have to always be back, because he won't, you know, naturally the point guard position is your safety. So just as long as they cover that, he can really help on the offensive glass as well. He's got this nice touch off the glass, nice floater that he seems really comfortable with. He's making nice reads. He's running pick and pop with LaMarcus well. So overall, just really pleased with the way he's played.
Not to put on my Morton troll face here, but when Tony Parker comes back, what do you think the Spurs do with their point guard rotation?
You know, it's a great question, because I really don't see Pop putting Tony on the bench.
Right.
But you never know. I mean, DeJounte's certainly making a case for himself. And honestly, not to slight Tony, I certainly want Tony on the floor, but I think there is an opportunity for him to play really well off the bench too. So, I mean, it's a tough call, but that's good news though. If DeJounte keeps making it a tougher and tougher call for Pop, I'll be happy with that.
It's not a tough call. It really isn't.
Surprise, surprise, the Spurs have another first world problem on their hands.
Yeah.
Boo-hoo. You have too many talented point guards. Shucks. Mort, how about you? Who is your crush of the week?
Well, this is our first crush segment of the season, and I'm already going to cheat. I have two.
Okay,
my number one is rookie John Collins. Mm-hmm. I loved him coming out of college. Just a high efficiency player, great rebounder. We talked about him at length when we had like a plethora of guests on prior to the draft. A lot of guys were not really that high on him, and I just didn't understand why. And the two biggest arguments were he didn't have range and he wasn't a great defender. Now, the great defender part is one I agree with. I also obviously agree that he doesn't have range, but it's not been a problem. Like, he's a high efficiency player who can score around the rim. He's athletic. He rebounds. He's doing all that dirty work. He's an old school four, but he makes it work for himself. Really digging it. He's averaging 11.8 a night, scoring wise, 7.8 rebounds and a block, and that's only in 19.3 minutes, shooting 53% from the field and 82% from the line. This guy just is one of those guys who is continuously going to be efficient like he was at Wake Forest. So really digging what he's doing. And the second thing, also a little bit of a crush, is the Jordan Bell off the glass LU dunk. Because I don't care that the game is over or whatever. I think it was so stupid to make a thing out of this. Look, I know I'm European, and in Europe here, when we play basketball, we don't like dribble the clock out. It's balls to the wall until the buzzer. That's the game. We've seen this thing in America where everyone is like, you have to pay respect. You know what? If you pay respect, then I mean, this team was down. The Dallas Mavericks were down like 30 at that point in time. Like, just if you want respect, show up for the fucking game. I mean, I have no problems with it whatsoever. And Rick Carlisle blowing off Steve Kerr after the game when Steve trying to apologize for it is just ridiculous. Come on. I mean, then show up for the game. I have no problem with what Jordan Bell did. And, you know, the crowd was oohing and aahing. And at the end of the day, that's what this is all about. What we are covering right now is entertainment. So get over yourself, old school NBA guys who have a problem with guys running up the score. Jesus Christ. It's an old problem. Like, new school thinking, please.
Breaking news, the Warriors are showboats. I had no idea.
Right. Like, I mean, they are. I mean, but,
right.
Like, but I don't care who it had been. I mean, it could have been, you know, Orlando running up the score on a bad game from Toronto. It doesn't matter. And Terrence Ross doing a 360. It doesn't matter. Just, I mean, he wanted to give the crowd something. He gave it, and they were oohing and eyeing, and it was nice. Like, Jesus. I'm just tired of drama being everywhere. Like, just stop yourself.
It was worth it just for Kevin Durant's reaction. Like, that's definitely going to become a meme if it hasn't already today. Like, it was a little bit last night. I saw someone tweet out, like, when they find your other burner account, and then KD with his covering his face with his eyes wide open. So if it isn't a meme yet, please let it be one. But good call on John Collins as well. For anyone who plays fantasy basketball up there, pick him up now. Back-to-back double doubles. It's only a matter of time before Atlanta goes into a youth movement. That kid's gonna get more minutes as the year goes on. Yeah, I mean, Mort, you were right. You nailed him pre-draft. I remember every time we brought up mid-range prospects, you know, you always made sure to ask about John Collins because you were like, I really like this guy. What am I missing here? And then people were like, well, yeah, he's fine. He is what he is. But it looks like, you know, Atlanta's got some. I didn't want to take Torian Prince for my crush because I don't, I want to spread the crush love. I don't want to focus two players on one team, but like
that has Torian one Prince win.
Is, yeah, right, right. But Torian Prince is playing really well. Like he's gonna be, he's a thing. He is a legitimate thing. DeAndre Bembry is hurt right now, but you know he's got talent. Like Atlanta has, they're starting to have some fun young pieces on that team. Not counting Dennis Schroeder taking 30 shots and scoring 25 points a game. My crush of the week, I'm going back to the Brooklyn well here. Caris LeVert. We brought him up earlier when we were talking about Eric Bledsoe trade stuff. But, I mean, so Lynn goes out the first game of the season. Alan Crabb started against Orlando. LeVert came off the bench against the Hawks on Sunday. LeVert started. Crabb went to the bench. In 30 minutes, LeVert had 16 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals on 5 of 9 shooting. Kid's really good, guys. Like, I don't know, you know, I made fun of you more last episode, and we mocked you preseason for you saying the Nets had a chance to make the playoffs. I still don't think they do, but the Nets have some really interesting young guys. Not only D'Angelo Russell, who is already... 3 games into the season, making Lakers fans just have pangs of regret over that trade. But LeVert, I know, Mort, you're not crazy high on Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, but he's, you know, he's in the mold of a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist in that he's at least a good defensive wing slash forward who can't shoot at all.
Oh, he's solid. He's just, like, there's a ceiling.
Right, 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 right. Jarrett Allen, Isaiah Whitehead, like, this team... If they hadn't traded away each of their past, like, 16 draft picks, they would be in much better shape. But, again, I feel like I shout Sean Marks out on this podcast at least once a month. But, once again, shout out to Sean Marks for taking the gamble on LeVert. Like, lottery talent that fell to 20 because of injury issues. Knock on wood, he's been healthy so far. So I hope he stays that way and we get to continue seeing him build upon his game because he's... He and D'Angelo, like, the Nets are on the rise. Like, if I'm a New York fan right now, who would you rather be a fan of, the Nets or the Knicks?
Right.
It's no question.
Yeah. The Knicks have Kristaps, but, like, the Nets have competent management, a great young coach in Kenny Atkinson, who's great with player development. Like, the Nets are on the rise. It sucks that they're not going to have their draft pick this year. But after that, they start getting draft picks again, too. And, like, they're probably not going to be in the playoffs next year either. So they'll have a chance to start adding to this young core.
So remember when you trolled me a little bit on Twitter and you said, you know, you quoted the whole Jeremy Lin injury that he was out for the season. You attacked me and you said, you know, that you didn't want to see my playoff projection die this way, which is, right. I get that. And then I said I would still... claim victory if they won 35 games, and you said, I pretty much nailed this one. I think you said, bruh, you can claim victory if they win 25.
Yeah.
Now, I'm giving you one chance to back out of that one right now. 25, that's your number.
25 is low, yeah. I mean, I'm going to stand by it, because after we mentioned their schedule coming up and how it's a cakewalk, but after that, it gets
builds confidence, horrendous. Dude. You can ride that wave. Confidence is everything. Is everything.
I don't know. I still think they're like I am thrilled for them. I'm especially thrilled for D'Angelo Russell, who I believed in. And I wanted the Sixers to pilfer just from the moment that Snapchat gate with Nick Young came out. I'm really glad that we're starting to see him become the player that he's always been and that he always could be. And it was just he was in a crappy situation with the Lakers, but I don't know. I'm gonna ask you to pause on your victory lap more until they play a real team, because Indiana, Orlando, and Atlanta, that's all I'm gonna say.
Well, we'll see.
All right, well, that will do it for this episode of the NBA podcast. Thank you all to tuning in. Reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find all three of our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe there, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. We're being hosted on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, you two.
You too, Brian.